Welcome to the Sonic Screwcast, where the Lorehound's your guides to all of time and space. I'm John, the song contest tech with the exact skill set the doctor needs.
And I'm Alicia, ready to with a protest song to speak truth to corporate power. Welcome to our coverage of the BBC and Disney Plus series, Doctor Who.
Ian from Captain's Pod is back with us. Hello, Ian.
And I don't get an intro because I messed it up last time.
I threw this together 2 seconds ago.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, you know what? I literally read it right now. So even if you had, I would have messed it up again.
You want a quip for us? You want to give us a quick one?
Oh, and I sing things and don't get recognized for it.
That's right. Did you cut off your horns?
I did, but it was for completely separate reasons.
No.
Okay, that's obviously right. Full spoilers here, but did anyone else think that as soon as she spoke up and said, you know, like her Lem, I guess he was her manager, is that the deal? Anyway, as soon as Lem was like, oh, Hellions are just, you know, cannibals and witches and blah, 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 mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, people say that. I'm like, oh, that haircut actually, it would exactly cover mm-hmm. a pair of horns.
Yes.
But no, she cut them off.
It was I thought they could have just left the horns.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought the big reveal was going to be they've been hiding here all along. I was like, exactly. Well, okay. I guess not. Then you just cut them off. That's interesting. Yeah. Feels like a missed opportunity.
And then not like fully off either. Like there's some solid stubs there.
Yeah. You needed something there for a reveal. Imagine if she just lifted it up and there was just regular head. There was nothing there. Like, what did you just reveal? Ta-da!
May I introduce you to the electric sander?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Oh.
So we are talking, of course, spoilers for season 2, episode 6, the Interstellar Song Contest. And I see Alicia's put the Spoilers River song here, but I don't have that sound clip. So imagine it in your minds if you're a classic New Who fan.
Well, stop it now. No. That broke my brain.
Okay. So there's one other thing. The copy that we were given to watch is redacted. So we don't know exactly what is missing from this episode. We think it's just the very end. So if we just glide off into the sunset and you're like, wait, they didn't talk about that last scene. That is why.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. We literally got a spoiler, sweetie.
Yeah, we did. They don't trust. Like, no. It's not enough. It keeps getting, this season keeps getting under more and more lockdown as we go, you know, versus like, yeah, here's some screeners to start you out. And then it's like, everything is top secret.
And yes. My instinct is...
The existence of this episode is top secret.
Yeah, and my instinct is to, I feel like they might almost be better off Deadpooling it a bit. So, you know, like Ryan Reynolds leaked... Mm-hmm. That clip, and I got the movie made. I feel like it could use the publicity. Like it's odd, but I feel like a strategic leak might actually be a good thing.
You know, this was something that I saw Ben Folds. Everybody familiar with Ben Folds, the music artist?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
He leaked a fake version of his album. He recorded it 5 alternate songs with the same title from his upcoming album. Just to mess with people, and then he leaked them on like torrent sites.
Amazing. Yeah, that's great.
People debate to this day which version is better, and like it was like really good for his publicity. He's a smaller artist.
Yeah.
And I do think you're right. Like just mess with us a little bit. Yeah. And a lot of people were theorizing early in the season, and maybe it's true still, that all this talk about like, will it be canceled? Will it get off of Disney Plus? Will it go back to just BBC? Or will it altogether take a hiatus? A lot of people think that that's RTD spreading leaks and trying to mess with us because of some kind of tie-in with a finale. And I could see it still.
I thought that after the Lux episode.
Yeah.
When it got very meta and Mrs. Flood called it out. Oh, by the way, I wanted to call out something from last week where I was asking the story in the engine. I was asking about the spooky little girl in the street, and I did not notice until it was pointed out to me that this was actually Captain Poppy from Space Babies. The very little spooky girl who leads Belinda to the shop.
Oh, and then there was an interview with the Mrs. Flood actress who said like, oh, everything he puts in there is for a reason. I thought Space Babies was for nothing. But then he's always got a plan. So like, obviously we're supposed to pay attention to this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he loves a big reveal as well. Like, I keep trying to work through anagrams of Mrs. Flood because he loves just rearranging letters on the screen for us. It will be, I feel like all of the clues are there for us to figure it out. So in my brain, I'm kind of done speculating and just waiting for the story to unfurl at this point. Because there's so many more episodes. The theories are wild. Yeah, the theories out there at the minute are wild.
I still think the key line from last week is when Belinda asked him about the little girl, he said, the stories were leaking out, getting mixed up. And I think, and yes, there will be tinfoil hat corner later as well. It's all connected.
I still have one theory, even though I'm moaning about theories.
Okay. What is it?
Oh, my really wild one is that she's the Valyard, which is a classic villain and one of my favorites. And spoilers for the Trial of a Time Lord from 1987, but he is the amalgamation of all of the evilest parts of the Doctor, specifically between his 12th and 13th regenerations. So all of that got sucked into one person that is like just the pure, most evil elements of the Doctor. And that glimpse of him that we saw this week made me just confirmation bias myself into thinking that's what she is.
Okay. Do we think he's going to pull in things from, so we have the Space Babies tease, but do we think he'll pull together other things? Like, I'm still waiting for certain areas of resolution from that 76 Yards episode. We got another reference a few episodes ago to Roger Abb Williams' political party, that far-right party that we had in that episode. And now I have to credit Who Culture on YouTube pointed this out, that the Nexus model from last week looks a lot like the fairy circle in that episode. We'll see. Watching it.
Yeah, but knowing RTD, it's all been something.
Since we didn't hear from you, Ian, on the last three, what did you think about The Well, Lucky Day, and The Story in the Engine?
Okay, The Well, really enjoyed it. Lucky Day, The Story in the Engine, really, really liked it.
Okay.
So Lucky Day, I'm being a bit mean, but Lucky Day, we kind of had that episode already with the season premiere and the Planet of the Incels. I feel like that you can never make that point enough, but I feel like that story had been done. And this felt like a backdoor pilot, if ever I've seen one, to the Battle for Land and Ocean, whatever it is. The new unit spinoff show that's happening. So, yes,
from the from the ocean to the sea,
from land to the sea, or what?
Yeah,
war between the land and the sea. And part of me wonders if that is another thing where RTD might be messing with us with that title.
I hope so. I really do. But I almost think it was a little bit unfair to it's not Millie Bobby Brown, Millie Gibson. Because I don't think I really like the character of Ruby Sunday, but I don't, what she didn't need was an episode where we're all like, where's the Doctor again? Mm-hmm. Like, she didn't need that extra heat on that character to be like, what are we doing here? Spending a time doing this on a companion that's left, and where's the Doctor at? What's happening? We were promised we would get more Doctor this season. So I don't know. It feels like an oddly placed episode. I love seeing more of Ruby Sunday, but the episode didn't do much for me at all.
Okay. Well, would you call either The Well or The Story in the Engine, are they in your top episodes for the season so far?
Oh, The Story in the Engine is excellent. That was really fantastic. That's what I love to see Doctor Who do, and any sci-fi show, really. Like, you have this sandbox and use it to tell a really specific and impactful story that not everyone is going to appreciate because it may not be your background, but so much love and care went into it, and they had the right people behind it. That's probably my favorite episode of the season so far until this week.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So
and The World was great.
Yeah, and The World was great. Like, I liked The Well. I had a bit of an eye roll when, I mean, we all knew that it was going to be a tie into Midnight. That was the worst kept secret. And maybe that, I think that was a deliberate leakage of some sort, because I think you want that tie in to Midnight, because it's one of that and Blink are held up as the two best of the classic New Who, old new era of Doctor Who. So yeah, I'm not surprised that did the numbers that it did as well. But to be fair to it, it's a great episode, even without the tie-in. Like, I think it worked really well, even if you know nothing about Midnight.
Right. And I think it has way more tie-ins than that. I think that's another one where he's messing with us.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I have one more callback for this season. I just learned yesterday that Alan Cumming played Mr. Ring-a-Ding, and I am shocked by this. His American accent threw me off. I was never gonna recognize that Scotsman.
Yeah, I think Brits and, sorry, Scotland, you are technically British, but Brits and the Scottish.
Not willingly, no.
And that's fair. Don't hold that against them at all. I'm much better at doing American accents than vice versa, I feel like.
Oh, agreed. No, that's totally true.
My favorite thing was some of the videos where Hugh Laurie was revealed to be English, Dr. House. And just the national uproar that he's not American. Dang it.
Did you see his, what was it, Avenue 31, Avenue 5?
No.
Avenue 5, they use his American versus British thing as like a plot point.
That's amazing. Okay.
And it's really good. You know what? The show is canceled and the first episode is the reveal and it was like 5 years ago. So I'm just going to tell you, he is the captain of this like luxury cruise liner going through space. And they just feel like an American would have been more convincing as like a spaceship captain. So they have him be American. But when things start going wrong, he's in the background going like, "Blimey, this is terrible."
That's great.
And they're like, "You're British?"
That sounds like an episode of Doctor Who.
and then the whole rest of the show, he's just pivoting depending on who he's talking to, whether he's American or British.
That's great. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. But we're here to talk about Doctor Who, not... And should Hugh Laurie be the doctor? You tell us in the comments. So we've got, this great episode. The doctor's quest to get Belinda home to Earth leads to a space station hosting a famous song contest, but a harmless night of fun soon becomes the battle to survive. Ian, you've just given us your take on the other ones, and you've already given your praise to this episode, but you want to give us some specifics.
This was so much fun. Like, this was just a fun episode of Doctor Who. And I that sounds very basic, but a lot of the times I haven't been having fun. And this was just very entertaining. This was a kind of nonstop ride. Like, the pacing was great. I didn't feel myself kind of like second screening or checking my phone, checking the time at all. I was really engaged in the adventure, and it's not full disclosure, I'm not a Eurovision fan. I'm so sorry. It's in my blood as much as tea is because I'm English, but I wasn't there because, oh, this is two of my favorite franchises that are crossing over. But I think it used the conceit really, really well. And I just had a lot of fun. I like the side characters. I think it's interesting to have the Doctor be a bit darker. I like this a lot. And visually, it is beautiful. It's my biggest perk of the Disney era of Doctor Who is how freaking gorgeous everything looks.
Absolutely.
It is great.
What do you think, John?
Oh, fantastic. And I'm not, again, I'm a dirty American over here. I don't know what a Eurovision is. Never even heard of the thing. No, I've heard of Eurovision, but I hear about it and I'm like, that seems fun. And then I just don't ever tune in. We have American Idol over here. We don't need Eurovision. No.
I think Eurovision or some version of it would do extremely well in America.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is right up your alley. This is the most American thing that Europe does. So I'm amazed it isn't already there. It feels like we stole it from you guys.
But it would be very different in tone, I feel like.
I think it would be dominated by country. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. It'd be like, God and guns and Bibles. Yeah.
that song wins every year, I heard.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I really loved it. I, as Ian said, the darker side of the Doctor is what really sold this episode for me, like made it my favorite episode of the season, because that is something that we've gotten teased from Chuty's Doctor, but not fully given into, and we were almost in like Time Lord Victoria's territory here in a way that I haven't seen in a long time.
And it's an element of the Doctor that has been teased a little bit and twinged on, but only in like the extreme moments, like mainly with like the Time War stuff. And Peter Capaldi did the best job of dipping back into that. I'm the Doctor. I don't care. You're an ant.
Yeah.
And he's kind of always had that with his companions. There's always been a bit like, oh, Pat, you poor little insignificant creature. You have no idea what the big picture is. And while that's patronizing, I'm kind of okay with it as a character trait, because he's a timeless being that is like just a couple steps removed from being a god. Like, he should have this extra perspective, and it makes his empathy more powerful when that comes into play. The New Who stuff, I feel like, has started from a place of empathy, which I think we probably need in these times, but he then has to work towards the evilness, right? I think there's always been a base level of jaded evilness to the Doctor.
I mean, I have theories about this, but we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said, I'm in the middle of the Pertwee era, and I've watched probably like a season and a half since we last talked to Ian. And I brought this up at least on a previous podcast, but just watching John Pertwee go to Joe Grant and go, "Joe, you idiot." I'm like, man, I miss, we need more of that. We need more of that. Like just complete condescension of the Doctor. Like, he is an asshole at times.
Do we? I mean,
no, we need it.
That's not the shooty version, though.
No, it's really not. That's not
15.
No.
John Pertwee is like the height of nonchalant,
asshole.
Yeah, he's a bit of an ass, to be honest. He's not a nice Doctor. He's extremely patronizing to the women folk. But I know what you mean about having that just extra edge to him. But yeah, no, he's an example of like, oh, this is the 70s.
but even, you know, Matt Smith, Peter Capaldi, they both did these like lectures that didn't feel like someone lecturing out of their depth. It felt like somebody who had thousands of or a thousand years of experience and was able to speak from experience and be like, you fucking morons, stop messing it up. Stop messing it up already. Why do I have to keep fixing this?
Why do I have to keep saving you? It's such a burden to me.
Yeah. One of my favorite Capaldi lines is, search me up in the mortality index. Oh, you have an entry like everybody else. Under cause of death.
Yeah, I do love that.
All right. Howdy. Alicia, your hot takes?
So I am not really that into Eurovision either, per se. For anyone who is outside of Europe and randomly Australia and Israel and doesn't know what Eurovision is, it's basically, it's a song contest where each country gets to send one representative to sing a song on their behalf, and then everybody votes through an app. And I have to say, if you don't know what it is, this episode was a 100% accurate depiction, right down to the cat person announcer. you now know exactly what it is.
It has been held in space since 2012 as well.
Sure. I mean, it will be someday, as soon as they can. this is, you know, as they made the reference in this is what launched the career of ABBA, Olivia Newton-John, a lot of the biggest artists of Europe, and especially Sweden for some reason, have been launched through this contest. And I love how, they're like, vote using your home NeuroSync headset because it's the future. And they're like, or the app, because the app will persist for millennia. Yes.
There will always be apps. Exactly. Yeah. Phones die, apps are forever.
the Eurovision app specifically, with all of its glitches. Yeah. I love that there's like a whole moment about this. And I don't think so. John, you and I have been talking about the rehearsal season two, Nathan Fielder's show. And the second episode was also about a song contest, but randomly not tied to this, but tied to the fact that Nathan Fielder apparently used to be a producer on Canadian Idol. So I love having a song contest moment. I like that Belinda's letting herself have fun. I think this was the best episode of the season. Some things we haven't even talked about yet, Susan. But also, it had the full range of emotions. Like, I really teared up at the song at the end, but also it was fully horrifying when you see that funnel of people being sucked into space.
Yeah, some truly horrifying moments. That was a big one. I was like, oh, we're doing this. This is pretty, not quite as graphic as I thought when you factor in the Mavity stuff, but
right.
The initial thought was like, whoa, that's rough.
Right. Yeah, getting sucked out into space is usually a horrible instant death, but, you know, Mavity fields, so.
Exactly.
And for the science
nerds out there, I think it's technically blown into space, not sucked.
Okay. fair, because the atmosphere is inside, yes. All right. was sucked by the vacuum of space, though.
Yeah, okay, fine. I think I've been nitpicked. Yeah, okay, I'll allow it.
But I love how this episode's also digging into the psyche of the Doctor. You know, his guilt is mounting of people he abandoned. Belinda, Abena last episode, Susan is coming back. That's definitely a through line of the Doctor's story, and they're really ramping up that guilt right now.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder why... Now, like, the Doctor says an interesting, I know we're jumping around a little bit, but the Doctor says something interesting where he says his anger was because he was triggered by the threat of that many people dying reminded him of doing the same thing to what happened to his people. And I feel like that's got to be tied into the reason why he's suddenly seeing Susan in his mind. Like, that triggering has got to be linked to that trauma. I'm just always going to ask, in 1,000 years, why hasn't something triggered you yet? Like, there's some extra element here we're missing. Like, and she's in the TARDIS. Like, oh, it's oh, it's so juicy. It's so juicy to have her pop up.
I love it.
I want more Susan. I want more Classic Who tie-ins. I think it'll be rewarding. And that, not just because I'm watching it, everybody, but I do think, I actually recently wrote a blog post. Don't tell David, because he makes fun of me for never writing blog posts. So I wrote a blog post for our website about the role of lore, and I actually wrote it in relation to the Timeless Child and sort of how to change the lore while still respecting ongoing franchises. And I think Doctor Who is like a really good case to study on that, because it's been upended so many times.
Yeah.
But also still has this long history that has a continuity. And I love when they bring back these classic things, because it shows you, like, yeah, things are a lot different, but they're still the same too. And that's nice.
That's something I always really appreciated when we got into, especially the David Tennant era, because Christopher Eccleston's era didn't do a lot of that nodding back to Classic Who, other than really the Daleks turning up. Yeah. But then season two, he just like sprinkled in more and more. And with each reference, I was like, oh, it still counts. Everything that I've watched is still there. It still happened. Because it took a while for them to even confirm that Eccleston had regenerated from Paul McGann. Like, and obviously we know that didn't happen.
Now he has.
we kind of weren't sure that he was 11, or is this something new entirely? So yeah, I love that it's all still there. He is... He is Doctor Who 15.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of episode to go through. So, Alicia, you want to give us a synopsis?
Sure. The Doctor and Belinda make one more final stop to charge the Vortex Indicator in their quest to triangulate the location of Earth on May 24th, 2025, and get Belinda home. This time they land in the space station Harmony Arena just in time for the finals of the 2925 Interstellar Song Contest, accidentally stealing the private box of a couple named Mike and Gary. Little do they know, a pair of Hellions named Kid and Wynn from a destroyed planet have chosen this contest to take over the arena, ejecting the audience into space. Ah, see, that's like blowing. Ejecting the audience into space and setting up a Delta Wave device to hack the airwaves to kill the 3 trillion viewers at home. Luckily, thanks to the Doctor, the audience is merely held in stasis, protected by an extra Mavity field, while the Doctor works with Mike, the nurse, and Gary, the song contest tech, who happens to have the exact skills the Doctor needs to turn hologram tech into hard light.
Meanwhile, would you look at that?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Belinda teams up with Cora, one of the contestants who is saved by one of the Hellions, because it turns out Cora is secretly a Hellion herself, much to the chagrin of her manager, Len. She understands why Kid and Wynn are doing this. It's revenge on the corporation who destroyed their planet. But killing 3 trillion people is not the way to make a statement in the Doctor's galaxy. So with the help of the others, including Wynn, he overcomes Kid and destroys the Delta Wave device and uses his and Gary's new hard light invention to tractor beam in the frozen audience members and revive them. Shook from their experience, hosts Ryan and Sabine and the 100,000 just revived audience members have it in them for one song before they go. Contestant Cora outs herself as a Hellion, singing passionately in her own language, sings a song of protest so that the world will know what the corporation has done to her planet. So I had to look up the cryogenically frozen host, Rylan, Clark Neal is his last name, but this seems to be someone who's well-known in the UK.
Yeah, he's pretty much a household name in England. He was a contestant on The X Factor, which is the biggest version of that format of song competition that our country's ever seen. We had Pop Idol, and The Voice as well, and there's lots of iterations of this show, but The X Factor is the one that really kind of got the big gathering and had the longevity. And yeah, he was a contestant in that, but then he went on Celebrity Big Brother as well. And Big Brother is a different beast over here compared to American Big Brother.
Okay.
And yeah, he won Celebrity Big Brother, and that kind of catapulted him into orbit for like TV presenting. So he kind of like just pops up. If there's a random show happening, there's a good chance Rylan is presenting it, or it's Graham Norton. So yeah, they're just kind of TV personalities.
Okay. Oh, question though, about, you said Big Brother's a different beast. Just a fun side fact. A lot of these reality shows were invented in the Netherlands, including The Voice and Big Brother. But why is it different in the UK than the US? Not that
what's interesting is that from how I understand it, there isn't a public vote in American Big Brother. I don't know, actually. But in the UK Big Brother, it's mainly a public vote. Like we choose who leaves the house. And the way that makes it different is that there's much more of a focus on
being likeable.
On being likable, even though they kind of ignore that and end up being very unlikable. In America, like Survivor and stuff, it's much more about getting a team and strategizing and having an alliance and having your ride or die and playing tactics within the group, which is way more interesting to me. But in England, when you've got to like fight for the public votes, those alliances don't matter as much. And it tends to be a lot of people just sitting around being annoying.
Okay. I thought Rylan was very likable this episode.
Yeah, Rylan's great. Yeah.
I think Nina was the name of the woman in the control room. And at one point she says, "Give me some awe." And he goes, "Awe." She's like, "No, A-W-E.
It's so great. And I love Rylan for this because he does have this stereotype of being a bit dopey and a bit just stereotypically not dim is harsh, not the quickest on the uptake. So I love that he played into that. And it's like Anchorman reading whatever's on the auto cue in front of him. Right. That's what he'll do. He'll just read what you put in front of him.
Right.
So, and again, that ties into, they just wheel him out for this every year and then put him back into cryo freeze and then bring him back out.
This is his whole life.
Yeah,
it's like being severed. Yeah,
exactly. They're just going to keep wheeling him out for this. Like Hugh Jackman and Wolverine, they're just going to keep wheeling him out.
John, do you know Graham Norton?
I've seen him. Like, I recognized him when I saw him, but I have no idea anything about him other than what you just told me.
Okay. I mean, Graham Norton is he's a bigger personality. That one I did know in advance, mostly from his talk show. But I loved that he had the hologram, and he wishes he hadn't sold his license in perpetuity.
Oh, that's amazing.
He's the talk show guy. I've seen a lot of clips of David Tennant, my husband, on that show. Wait,
does Lestat know about David Tennant?
I have. Listen, it's a polyamorous situation.
Lestat would approve. Okay.
Lestat would approve. Well, no, actually, he wouldn't. He'd say
as long as your hearts aren't dancing.
Shout, I heard your hearts dancing.
Yeah, there we go.
Drop me out of the sky.
Now, Graham Norton is great. His interview show has been going for a long time now. He is hilarious and just like genuinely hilarious. He is just effortless. Like, I fully believe that who you see on screen is how he is walking around the house. He seems super duper genuine. And he's been hosting the UK broadcast of Eurovision for a long, long time. And the person that did it before him was a radio personality TV presenter called Terry Wogan. And I mention him because he defined how the UK watches Eurovision. And I think he's the main reason that we continue to watch post never winning it anymore because England is not popular. We do not win the Eurovision Song Contest.
I remember some zero votes years. Yeah.
For very valid reasons. We very often get zero votes. But Terry Wogan would acknowledge that and be like, well, we got no votes from the Germans. That makes sense. And he would always have like some quip. It was like, well, of course, Poland voted for this country and someone else voted for that country. And he kind of made it okay. He was very much embodied like what we were thinking at home, but he did it in a very political way. And Graham Norton has kind of got that same vibe to the way that he presents it. It's a very English way of handling defeat.
And we finally get more, a little bit more from Mrs. Flood. What did you think about Mrs. Flood this week, John?
I was kind of surprised that she seemed totally cool with the doctor just like blowing out into space.
But what happened to her? Because
that's a good question, actually.
She was in the audience and then we didn't see her after that.
But it seemed like she knew what was going to happen, right?
She's really?
Like, He did the thing. Now let's sit and watch the show. We've got time.
Oh, see, I took it. I thought she looked surprised when they showed her face right before. But I don't know. But she said, okay, we know she's been interested in him using the Vindicator. And so he used it. And now she says, okay, thank you, doctor. That's the final link. And she has this like portable button that she's carrying around now that she's going to trigger something. So I'm guessing that's going to kick off whatever we were redacted from seeing for next week.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It was at that point where my brain was like, stop speculating now because you haven't got anything intelligent to say. Like, I genuinely don't. It makes sense that she's the god of stories and she's crafting all of this and she's not concerned. But you're right, she was surprised by this. So I wonder if this button was ejected up there. Maybe the post-credit scene or the mid-credit scene, whatever you want to call the teaser, it's just the button floating in space, and maybe that's the big button that ends the story of Earth. It's so coy.
And then we see her do a General Organa Frozen going toward the button, and she pushes it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mary Poppins moment.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because we do get this whole thing later with Grant Norton. Is that Grant? Wait.
I think Graham. In America it's Graham, but it's Graham.
What? Oh.
Okay. Graham?
Graham. Oh, but well, I think that in America explains, you say Graham.
That explains a lot of how Jodie Whittaker was talking in those seasons. So anyway, I always thought it was weird.
Because she had a Graham.
Yes, she had a Graham.
Exactly. Yeah, and yes.
A Graham.
She had a Graham.
It sounds Southern.
It's almost Southern. Well, did you know that the Southern accent is a version of a retained former British accent before the vowels shifted in the UK.
Oh, that's amazing. Wait, are you saying England sounded Southern for a long time? That's incredible. I mean,
they've diverged, but yeah.
Yeehaw.
And then the upper class decided to drop their R's and you know, shift everything. And then the lower classes were like, yeah, we should sound more upper class. And then that just became a thing. And that's happened over like 200 years. It was not like a long thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's a short amount of time historically.
Yeah.
John, did you get Murderbot vibes from the guards who were announcing the phase activations?
Yeah, definitely. Are you watching Murderbot, Ian?
I haven't yet, but it's high on my list. I trust Apple with everything TV.
Yeah, it came out today as we're recording, so definitely. That's
probably why I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it came out at 9 last night, actually. It was one of those Apple, like, 9 ET, not Eastern. My God, ET, phone home. 9 Eastern in the US. And so I think they're doing that Apple thing where they're like, it's Friday, but it actually comes out at Thursday at night.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So that means 2 a.m. UK time. Yeah.
I was asleep.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a really good palate cleanser after Andor. I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you like Doctor Who, it's got, you know, it's also quite upbeat, but also with an emotional core, you know.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
Well, it probably respects science a little bit more. I was trying to look up, they have this delta wave device, and like a delta wave is something that's associated with sleep patterns. But I'm like, you know what? Brain waves, it's fine. Delta waves.
Oh, sure, RTD does not give a single thing. It's just tech thing does the tech thing to tech the tech. That's,
yeah.
I think somebody else puts those words in.
There's a bunch of tech speak at the end that we don't need to go through. But the emotional core was interesting. Like Nina, this whole idea of Kid and Wynn being less reluctantly so, the Hellions, the wronged people who lash out because they were wronged. It's kind of like they are the Gorman front, but RTD is warning against them rather than, you know. And she's like, I took a chance on you. No one employs Hellions. And he says, I'm only doing the things you expected of me. I don't know. What did you think about the whole commentary about the Hellions and how they're perceived and how Kid behaved?
Oh, man. This is a messy one, but I was going through mixed emotions as I went because I'm like, all right, I don't want to tell people to be like the good oppressed person. But also, I don't think killing trillions of people is the right move either. Mm-hmm. You know, like there can be a nuanced take of like, no, I'm not going to police you so much about like being the good victim. But at the same time, you can't go and then kill trillions of people who probably don't even understand what's happening.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Right?
There is a
balance there.
The parallel, obviously, with Andor is super duper clear. You have this rebellion, these people that, like, I wonder if RTD was watching Andor and just like, oh, damn, that's some unfortunate timing. that's irritating. But Star Wars has this, and Andor specifically has this huge context for it. Whereas we have 10 minutes with these people and are supposed to be not okay with it, but relate to the fact that he wants to kill 13 trillion people. And the point is, it's not the people that hurt him. It's to send a message and to get something out there that says, hey, now you're going to listen to us. And that is where the episode lost me, because it's really hard to relate to the villains when the 13 trillion is such an arbitrary number and it's arbitrary people. The really powerful thing to me was the song at the end. Like, that's the way, that's for me is how this episode puts the message out there a lot better and a lot more impactfully. Otherwise, I'm just kind of a villain wants to pick an arbitrary number of people to kill. The element that I kind of liked with Kid was that he was called Kid and the Hellion aspect, because Hellion is, I don't know if it's slang in America, but in England it's, oh, you young Hellions, like you're get off my lawn kind of energy. And he's called Kid, and we can villainize kids and assume that these hooded youths are tearing up shops and whatnot. And if you make that narrative, they become what they think they should become, and how much of that is our own doing. So him being called Kid felt like a nice RTD layer to the story as well. It's not necessarily about rebels, it's about kids and how they rebel and act out.
I was to say, especially when we have Cora later calls out the fact, the reason he's called Kid is because his mother was shot and didn't live long enough to say what his name was. So you get that extra layer of relating. But I agree with the doctor. He says, I've met so many versions of you, Kid, and revenge is just an excuse. You know, he's saying basically he just wants to hurt people anyway. But I am bothered by the fact that the doctor does not ask him why he's doing this. Eventually it comes out anyway, but that seems like something that the doctor would want to do. You know, we get his whole, like, you know what I will do? I will survive and I will find you. So I call him Liam Gloria Gaynor Neeson. But this whole thing about the angry doctor mode, okay, you've put ice in my heart, I'll watch you freeze in the void, blah, blah, blah. And Belinda's like, that's not him. And then later, he's electrocuting Kid, and even Susan's breaking through, whatever, we'll talk about Susan in a minute, to tell him to stop. But he doesn't stop until Belinda walks in. And I feel like the doctor is getting way too angry. We're being told that. And then I started to wonder, when did the angry doctor start? And when did we last see him do his single tear moment? And I feel like the well was the changing point that episode.
Yeah, I was looking out for it in the story in the engine, and I didn't see the single tear. No. Definitely didn't see one this episode. So I think that's a really good point.
So I wonder.
Yeah.
Well, we're about 40 minutes in. Let's take a quick break and come back and finish this episode.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
We're back. I want to finish off the thoughts we had before the break, actually, because I'm thinking, and you know, the doctor knows now that a past version of himself killed, I think, more than that many people, right? On Gallifrey and the Daleks for what he saw as the greater good, right? Mm-hmm. And man, I have a little bit of, I agree with Alicia that, like, why is the doctor not asking why? Because this does not comport with previous incarnations of the Doctor and his memories.
My current episode headcanon is that a lot of it comes back to what he said about being triggered. And if he's talking about like a really deep trauma trigger that just puts some blinders on and some fight or flight, everything disappears. Like if it's a truly triggering moment, he just shuts down and went straight into, how do I solve this problem? How do I get rid of what's going on? And the things that he's saying in the moment for me is trying to work through that. And I don't think he fully realizes that until Belinda challenges him. And I think he's working through it in the moment that, yeah, I guess him doing that really, really triggered me. And that doesn't excuse his actions, but he's in a different mindset. He's in a different frame of mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting because, again, I'm watching the Pertwee era, watched recently The Day of the Daleks, right? And Day of the Daleks, he's literally captured and threatened to be killed by a group of gorillas. And the first thing he says basically is like, why? And he figures out that they're actually the good guys against the Daleks.
Yeah.
Mm. And they're trying to change history so that the Daleks don't come in power. Mm-hmm. And it's by the way, a really great story and was very influential on some later media. I forgot, somebody said that they accidentally based their story on this. I'll find it by the end of the episode. I'll figure it out. But my point is, like, the doctor has always been curious, and that's one of his biggest strengths, right? Biggest strength is he can go into a situation and try to see it for what it is instead of just jumping to conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wonder what just the fact that if the doctor had probed into that a little bit, you know, he's saying I'm triggered because it makes me think about my planet, everyone dying in a second. But if he drilled down into it, it's obviously he and Kid are more alike than he wants to admit, because Kid's being triggered by the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, at the end of this episode, the Graham Norton hologram says, poor old Earth died many years ago on May 24th, 2025. And he says the same wording, that it disintegrated like Gallifrey, everyone died in a single second, cause unknown. Mm-hmm. So it's setting up the exact same thing to happen for Earth.
Yeah. Oh, and I do want to just quickly say it was Days of Future Past that was inspired by that story of
Yeah,
mm-hmm. because the twist in Day of the Daleks. God, I can't say this today. And you know, fast forward if you don't want a 50-year-old story spoiled. But was that the gorillas accidentally caused the rise of the Daleks because they tried to kill somebody who was actually trying to prevent it. But they thought that because the Daleks had changed history. And so they thought that they had to save him. Sorry, they thought they had to kill him, but really they had to save him. Oh, change the history. No. It was the whole thing. It was a whole mess up. And then the doctor had to race back to stop the gorillas from making their own history come true.
Oh, I'm going to have to rewatch that one. I've definitely seen it more than once. But yeah, that's really fun. I love that. Yeah.
So Days of Future Past, X-Men, based on that.
Nice.
Question, do you think they're setting Kit up to come back in a future story? Because it feels like he was sent to something called the Justice Monolith, and it feels like he and the Doctor have a vendetta now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think there's an intent for that to happen this season. I think if he'd been sent to UNIT's Arkham Asylum, perhaps, we saw that's definitely going to come back. But yeah, maybe next season, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't, if they do it well, you know, anything well, I'll watch, but I would not hate if he just went away. And how many villains have been like, I'll get you meddling kids and then never come back. That's just a thing.
I think the only thing that makes him different for me is how much the Doctor specified, I will never forget you. I'll always have ice in my heart because of you. And I was like, wow, you've battled like the Daleks, Cyberman, the Master, this kid, really?
Right. And the Master he repeatedly has empathy for too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's why I agree with Belinda. I agree with Belinda. This is not the Doctor. There's something is off about him. And how do we think, I mean, I know, John, I was really excited for you to see this episode. We have our private Doctor Who chat, and when I watched, I wrote in the chat, 16 minutes in, side eyes. And I knew you were going to be excited to see Susan show up. So who's Susan for those who forget, and why were you excited?
You'll hear her say grandfather a lot. She was very whiny in the original. I'll just say that. Like, I think she was in her 20s when she was playing Susan, Carol Ann Ford. Mm-hmm. But she was playing a 15-year-old. And in the 60s, when you wrote a 15-year-old, you wrote that 15-year-old was very whiny.
And I think if you wrote women, you wrote them as very whiny.
That's like, true. That's, and so you got the double. The thing. You got the double. And so she was the Doctor's granddaughter, and she shows up, and she's his first companion ever.
Yeah. That we know of.
But I think what I've always understood is that the first Doctor, and you know, we're talking about post Timeless Child, I'm not going to go into that because we just don't know what happened before then. Mm-hmm. But the first Doctor didn't really start meddling like he did until Susan makes him go to Earth, and Susan's the one who's like, I want to go to the 20th century and see what's going on, because the 20th century England is just so fascinating. It's just like, it's where every alien would want to go and study. Mm-hmm. And I love in the first episode, I think she goes, but grandfather, I love the 20th century Earth.
That sounds like somebody wrote that in 1965.
I know.
Yes.
I know. It's so bad. It's so like, all right, we get it. Pat, you know, it's that Obama putting a medal on himself meme, right?
But, okay, so Susan was left, he left her behind in this early, and so people have been wanting her to come back and wanting the explanation. How does the Doctor have a granddaughter? So he left her behind on Earth, but the way he talks about her this episode, it seemed like he thought she died on Gallifrey. Did you guys get that impression?
I think this was inferred last season as well, that he mentions Susan during the musical episode.
The Maestro one.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the Maestro. And
the Devil's Court. That's what
it's called. Yeah, that's it. He doesn't know. He doesn't know if the button that he pressed just killed Gallifrey and the Daleks, or every Time Lord everywhere all at once. So I think that's what he was hinting at, was he doesn't know if he reached out across time and killed Susan. But the interesting thing is the fact that he doesn't know that confirms that there is a biological relation there, because that's always been not explicitly confirmed. Because yes, she says grandfather, but they've been very coy about whether that is a affectionate term or a biological thing, because the man calls himself the Doctor. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't he call himself grandfather during that iteration of his life for whatever reason? But yeah, that's how I read that.
But then you also have this comment, a stray comment he made during one of the last couple episodes of last season, of season one of New Who, where he goes, you know, I'm a Time Lord. I can do things out of order. Because they were like, how do you have a granddaughter? You don't have kids. Mm-hmm. He's like, I do things out of order. So like, I guess you could say like, okay, even if it doesn't go beyond Gallifrey, the destruction of Gallifrey, maybe if he needed to have a child with a Time Lord to get to Susan, maybe it's been interrupted now, right? Like maybe there's no more Time Lord. Maybe Susan's grandmother is no longer around, and so that whole history is gone. But then you get into a bootstrap thing. But the doctor who doesn't care about bootstrap paradoxes.
Oh, but I don't know. He made that explicit in the Joy to the World Christmas special. Yes. But like, also,
I will quote the 11th Doctor always. The paradoxes will largely work themselves out.
But so I recently rewatched that episode, Listen, because I think that it has ties to the Well episode that we just got. And in that episode, he says, like at one point, he just puts the kid out. Danny just touches him on the head and he says, father skills, like he has practice somehow being a father.
Mm-hmm. They're really messing with... And I do think that's intentional, because in the same season, same writers, like, what are we doing? Oh, you're saying in Listen, he said that. That's not the same season and same writers, because that's Capaldi, right? But he does say something about having father skills in the first episode with the Belinda lookalike. What's that episode? You know what I'm talking about?
With the Belinda look. Oh, Mundy Boom. Flynn. Boom. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he says something about being a father in Boom, father to father, I think he says
exactly.
That's it,
So they are really being fast and loose about this, and I do think RTD would not let that happen in the same season if that was not on purpose.
Yeah, I think that's his way of making us comfortable with the fact that the Doctor is a sexual being, because he hasn't been until New Who. And I think that knowing that you're introducing or reintroducing Susan is going to have that inevitable, well, if there is granddaughter, that means daughter. So, or maybe not, because he does it out of order. But you've seen it recently, John. So do you remember the circumstances under which he leaves Susan?
Yeah, she, again, not great. 15 years old. Can we just emphasize that? And like, okay, she might have been a little older. We don't know how much time passed between these adventures in the first two seasons. This is only in the second season of Doctor Who. You've got his companions are Susan and her two school teachers, Barbara and Ian.
Yeah.
And so he's saved Earth from the Daleks, and there is this rebel against the Daleks. I think his name is David. And Susan's like, I love you, but my grandfather needs me, and and I must go. And then the Doctor overhears this and just locks her the fuck out of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And just talks to her over like the loudspeaker, like the police box, the police talker. And he goes, I'll come back for you, but it's you stay, you be in love, and I'll come back for you. So he just leaves them with people he's known for like days, and is like, she'll be fine.
He's like, you need to settle down. It's time for you to have a family and not go on these adventures anymore. Yeah. And you got to settle down, fall in love, have some kids, and I'll be back. And I'm just never. Like, oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Not sure I like the Doctor anymore.
It was very bad stuff. And the first Doctor in particular does some stuff that makes you go,
Yeah.
It's not great. It's not great. Now, John Pertwee's Doctor can be like a little bitchy, but he's kind still. The first Doctor can be kind at times, but he's not always kind.
No, he has the get off my lawn energy.
He does have the get off my lawn energy. I do love, I just watched the Three Doctors for the first time.
Oh, it's so good.
And I think because William Hartnell was in bad health, they had him on a screen and not in the room with them. And he goes, so these are my replacements, a dandy and a clown. Like, damn, just shots fired.
Just rough. Yeah, that is a great episode. That is really,
oh, it's
really
so
fun.
Good. It's so, so good. The special effects, horrendous, but I love the episode.
You
anyway.
Shut your mouth.
question about the doctor's physiology. So, of course, we have the conveniently nurse, Mike, and he says, two hearts, you show off. That was cute. But then a respiratory bypass system, is that new? Was that just invented to explain hand-wavy why he survived being frozen?
So I don't remember it specifically being mentioned. I am more than certain it has. But on more than one occasion, the doctor has made himself appear dead because he can slow his breathing down to absolutely nothing. And a companion will be like, he's dead! Wow! Mm-hmm. Cliffhanger music. And then he comes back, no, I'm a Time Lord. Of course I'm not dead. I just stopped breathing. So, yeah, I think there was more of a reminder that it's okay. He's going to be fine.
Which
is cute of the show to think I need that with the doctor.
I do like when the show winks at itself, like, did I just fly through space on a confetti cannon? Camp.
Yeah, I love that. It was good. That was good, too.
Brilliant. That's one of the things I really love about New Who, is just unapologetically... Yeah. Doing that bonkers stuff. Like, why not? Let's write it down. Yeah. Let's see if we can do it.
The old Who was doing it too. It was just taking it more seriously. I've watched John Pertwee be wrapped in paper and he's like, there's just no way I could get out of this.
Okay, but do you think that Mike and Gary were a little too convenient? Just the fact that they had, especially Gary, had exactly the skill set that the doctor needed. And then there was this weird moment later where Gary was the first one's like, I'd do anything for you. And Gary's like, and Mike's like, Gary? He's like, anything. And then later, Mike says same thing. I would do anything for you, doctor. Like, it seems like they're somehow being thralled to him in some weird way. It was a little too over the top to be natural.
I took that as a tongue-in-cheek, they're both attracted to the doctor kind of thing. But now that you've spelled it out, I think it makes much more sense especially if Mrs. Flood is the weaver of stories, that she has put these people in place to assist the doctor so that he gets to a place that she needs him to be in. And that I hope that's the case, because this is some of the most convenient side charactering. It almost has to be deliberate. Like, they didn't hang a lantern on it completely, but it is incredibly specific the way that they are able to help.
I wonder if they're ever going to explain Mavity, because I'm sure there are people who did not watch the 60th anniversary who's like, why do they keep saying this word Mavity? Because they said it a lot this episode, which is really calling attention. And anyone who didn't watch the 60th anniversary, basically, Donna and Dr. 14, who is actually 9 regenerated, they went back and they met Isaac Newton and they accidentally messed up him inventing the word gravity, so he invented the word Mavity instead.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just used throughout Who.
I would be stunned if anybody is watching now who hasn't seen those specials, because they were the first ones launched on Disney Plus, weren't they?
Yeah, but they're totally separate. So if you click on the series, it's not included in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just, it could be as cynical as, oh, you want to know what Mavity is? Go back and watch the specials. To anybody that
I think it might be that. But at the same time, like, I don't know if it's cynical as much as it's like, all right, this is a 60-year show. We're going to be dropping Easter eggs in here. If you want to know more about that, it's still available. Go watch it.
Yeah.
You know? And that, I think that's fine, too. Like, again,
I love how playful it is. I really do. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a dumb thing to do. And I remember I was watching it with my buddy, and I was like, there's no way they're going to keep up with Mavity, are they? And the first time it appeared, I was like, oh, they're doing it. They're going to do that. That's great.
Good for them.
I don't mind if it's Mavity forever, but they did call a lot of attention to it this episode in particular. Yeah. All right, important question for you guys. So Kid says, tonight I'll be representing revenge against the corporation. And the doctor says, I'm the doctor, the last of the Time Lords. And Kid says, good band name. So what is our Doctor Who band name?
I would go with the Tower of Rassilon, because I just think that, and we would be heavy metal music.
All right. I'm going to center myself in this, obviously. I'm going to go with Maverty Maven and the Hounds of Lore.
Love it. I love it.
I feel like the Veilyard itself sounds like a metal band.
Yes.
It's true. It's true.
Take off the. Make it just Veilyard, and now you are in a metal band.
I think it would have to be the amazing and righteous directors in rock stars.
Who's our sponsor?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. Are you listening on the ad feed right now, people? You can tell who our sponsors are. It's different for everybody. It's randomized.
That's true.
Casio watches specifically.
Yeah. I mean, so in this episode, I did clock as soon as they mentioned poppy honey, 100% organic golden poppy. I'm like, okay, that's important. They zoomed in on that. But mm-hmm. I liked it. It is a real world tie-in because it made me think a planet invaded for honey made me think immediately of Hawaii, which was taken over by the U.S. military for sugar in large part.
Mm.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Interesting.
I felt like a direct call.
Well, that's the only place we have coffee now without tariffs. So I guess that's working out in the end.
It was the long game. Oh, yeah, that's fine. They just deposed to people in a culture. But anyway.
Details.
The third doctor would be fine with it.
You know what? Ian, since you've watched some Pertwee, why is he always eating sandwiches? Can you tell me that?
It's just fun to watch him eat a sandwich. I honestly don't know. I think they were still working out the doctor having quirks because the only thing they really did was change the costumes back then. And they gave the second doctor a flute.
Yeah.
I think they were in the early days of experimenting with what is this doctor's doctor? And his was apparently sandwiches.
Yeah. Yeah. I see it. He's got quite the vibe. He's grown on me over the last couple seasons. I'm right. I'm done talking about Percy. We're talking about Katwa.
He was the first doctor in color TV. So
yeah.
They deliberately played with his flamboyant, like the flamboyant colors we see is because of color TV suddenly arriving and being able to take advantage of that.
Right. But of course they slashed the budget at the same time. So they grounded him on Earth for three seasons, I think.
Well, 20th century is the best place to be, of course.
But I do actually want to say one more thing about this is like, you know, we've had Kate Lethbridge-Stewart around, and watching John Pertwee's era really makes me appreciate the Brigadier so much more. I mean, he's kind of the first human that pushes back against the Doctor.
He really is. I love the Brigadier so much. I wish we could have brought him, sadly the actor passed away, but I wish we could have brought him into New Who sooner. He's such a great character, and he would like put the Doctor in his place and be like, "Unit is my toy, not yours. Stop it."
And he does, I believe, show up in Sarah Jane Adventures, right, Alicia? Are you up to that
not yet? Spoilers. Spoilers. So far, I've watched the first two seasons, except I have not watched this last story in the second season. So there's still room for him. And I know season three's the crossover with Doctor Who. And now I finally know who the characters are. So yay.
Oh, that's good.
I forget. What was I going to say? Oh, about Kate. I know that, Ian, you did not love Lucky Day. But for me, even though Kate went Darth Kate, this was the episode that really sold me on her.
Oh, I love Kate. I adore her. I think she is the right person to lead the spin-off. It just felt odd to me to place the backdoor pilot to the new Torchwood show in the middle of this season. And when Ruby's already received so much heat for not being a great companion, it just felt like such an odd choice. But yeah, I love Kate. She's incredible.
Maybe I like Ruby, but I think maybe she's better on her own. And this episode showed that. But yeah, so Kate is the Brigadier's daughter, if anyone didn't get that connection.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't even know his first name because it doesn't matter. Yeah. He's Brigadier Lethbridge-Stewart.
It is Alistair Gordon Lethbridge-Stewart.
Okay. Good God. That's the most British name I've ever heard.
It's amazing. It's incredible.
Honestly, brave for them to do a hyphenated long name for a recurring character, you know?
Oh, in the credits? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's how you know Alistair he's Gordon upper crust.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
His mustache.
And his mustache. Speaking of connections, we find out that we have this Wynn-Cora connection, that Wynn was Cora's kin sister, but she left her behind. So we're drawing parallels between Cora and the Doctor leaving people behind.
Do you hear that? That's the Wheel of Time alarm. Go ahead.
Alicia. Exactly. I did think about that. Yeah. No, I mean, the kin sister obviously reminds me of Io, but I agree with you guys that I think the message of this show was that the final protest song is supposed to be like RTD saying, this is the way to protest. Don't blow stuff up. Make an emotional connection with the audience. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the moment Gary starts the slow clap?
Ugh, it's in my being to hate it. My day job is nitpicking movies, and it slow claps are just the most jarring. They will never not be jarring. It's just I think we need to retire them.
Hmm.
He said while clapping.
they only work sarcastically. I personally thought that the whole song thing was like incredibly naive of a message of like this is the way. One song will change the minds of millions, trillions, and make sure that these people are never oppressed again. And the corporation won't fight back. They'll know that they've lost now. And it's just not, living in the day that I'm living in today. I'm sorry, but I have more cynicism than that allowed me to buy into.
I think that's fair. But I think it can be naive and still something to strive for. Like,
sure.
Public opinion can be really important. Know it can be really important, and it can have an impact, and it can make companies U-turn. We unfortunately are just entering a time where companies are realizing public opinion may not actually affect their bottom line, and we're seeing more than ever them pushing against, I don't care if we're not liked, turns out we can still make money. So and there's so many layers to this, but the core message of it worked for me. And the extra element that I loved is that at Eurovision, you stereotypically get more points and more votes if you sing in your own language. So you have the vote is split, I think 50% professional judges that vote, and then the other 50% is the public of Europe. So you definitely get more weighting from the critics and the professionals when you sing in your own language. So that nod at the end to singing the Eurovision song in her own language and no subtitles, unapologetically, here is the song. And it's beautiful, even if in this invented language, it's incredible. So that was kind of, I couldn't help but think of Andor as well, and how good they are at making up languages, and the care that went into this song. So the execution was fantastic for me.
And I love the fact that, she had her horns cut off, because apparently Hellions are not allowed to sing in this galaxy, because apparently that's an act of terrorism or something. But what's interesting is the very real world rules about, in Eurovision, you are explicitly not allowed to sing anything that's considered political. And this has caused some controversies, especially in recent years, about what is considered political and what is not considered political. And here, this was clearly like flat out, like, we're canceling the entire competition because we almost died, but here's a political song.
Yeah. And it just has to reflect, how can you not be political? Like, especially in Europe, which is just all over the spectrum. But I love the idea of it being a non-partisan, non-political event. But it's also downplaying how political our lives are. Like, you can't ignore it, especially when part of the continent is at war.
Yeah. I mean, when Ukraine won a couple years ago, like, that was a great, fun song, but definitely there was a lot of politics behind that voting.
Of course. Yeah. And it's the same every year, whether there's a war or not. There is a huge amount of who's trading with who right now, who has the best tariffs, because it's not the European Union song contest. If it was, we may be able to make it less political, but it is all of Europe, regardless of whether you're in the Union.
Right, whether you Brexit it or not.
Yes, indeed. Sigh.
Yeah, I gotta watch Eurovision this year. I think you guys have convinced me.
I'm not watching it, probably.
Okay, there is one
thing. It's
tonight,
right?
It's tonight, yeah. There's one thing it's that tonight. Will save you.
No, as this episode comes out.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Correct. All right, we're recording this in advance. All right, okay.
Yeah, all right. Saturday, timey-wimey. If you're not sold yet, Google Lordi, L-O-R-D-I. I believe they were from Finland, and they are my all-time favorite Eurovision entry. They are incredible. They were okay. Something else. It is a, yeah, Eurovision is a visual spectacle, if nothing else.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I'm putting this on. I'm checking out some Eurovision.
Yeah, I know David's going to, his wife's organizing a Eurovision party, I think, with Jean's wife. So, yeah.
It's very American. I think people would absolutely love it. My friend, who I stay with when I come over to the States, he was offended and said, I've just discovered Eurovision. I've known you for 5 years, Ian. How did I find out about this through someone else? And I said, because there's so much like Europe I haven't shared with you, but he adores it.
Mm. I mean, it's fun. It's especially fun to watch with other people where you can just, yes. Some of it, there are some legitimately good songs every year. I put a couple on my playlist. But a lot of it is just watching the spectacle and being like, what the hell is this thing what now? What's Finland up to? Finland always has something fun up their sleeves.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, it's time to get Belinda home. She's got a tasty chef on Hinge waiting for her. I love these teases of her life before. I'm like, I would like to see some of this too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless
it's not real, unless she's a construct of the TARDIS. And that's why we've never met anybody around her.
True.
So, okay. So the version that we got ends with the Vindicator is ready and there's a red light failure in the TARDIS and clonking noise. And the doctor says, that's the sound of May 24th. And then something explodes into the TARDIS. And then we got it cut off right there.
Yeah.
So do we think it was just the credits in the preview that was cut off? Or do we think anything else was?
My instinct is it wasn't just the preview for next week. There was something else that we saw, because that cut didn't feel like a super clean credits cut. I feel like it's not just the next week. I feel like there is something else we get to see behind the TARDIS doors exploding.
Just Susan standing there.
Just Susan, yeah. It's got to be something special, because the TARDIS, one of the really consistent MacGuffins that they've carried through Doctor Who is that the TARDIS is indestructible. And it has to be so that it isn't invaded. And it's one of those, it's like the warp drive. Like, I just accept it. The TARDIS, for reasons, is indestructible. So to blow its doors off is unprecedented, even for Doctor Who.
Well, there was the thing where the TARDIS exploded in Matt Smith's seasons. Like, there was a version of the world where the TARDIS exploded and it, like, set everything into chaos.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, my brain. I cannot even remember that.
We've done this before. That's all I'm saying is we've seen this happen before in a different way.
Right. Okay. It's still big. What I love is that tone, the bong, it has a name. It's called the Cloister Bell. Mm-hmm. So whenever that bong turns up, I get just immediate feelings well up inside me, because I think the first time we heard it was the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, when his regeneration was coming, the TARDIS knew and set off the Cloister Bell. And that was the first tweak in his mind where he's like, oh no, something's coming. In New Who, it's been used a lot. If you do a rewatch now, you'll notice the Cloister Bell a lot more, and it comes up. So for me, it still like gives me tingles, but it's not the omen of, oh no, that it once was. But it is meant to be end times. The TARDIS knows something big is coming.
Okay. Well, the end of Earth.
Yeah, pretty big.
The end of the show, as Mrs. Flood puts it.
I do think that's just RTD messing with us. I don't think the show goes away. Yeah, you know, I could see Disney being like, you know, this didn't really bring in the audience we thought it would, and you know, you guys can keep it. But I don't think the BBC is going to let this one go again. I think they recognize that the 90s were a mistake to let that go.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's not pulling in the views it did once upon a time, but it's still up there. It's still outperforming a lot of stuff. Like, you can't deny that brand recognition.
It's still one of the BBC's biggest shows, right? Even if I think the BBC in general is kind of suffering because it's a public channel.
Yeah, I think BBC disappears before Doctor Who does.
Yeah. Yeah. They sell Doctor Who for parts.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
right, shall I take you on a tour through Tinfoil Hat time?
After yes. one more break. We're back, and though this is an audio podcast, I can confirm that Alicia has a tinfoil hat on.
It's all connected. So I've been watching the Sarah Jane Adventures specifically for the Trickster plot lines, because the Trickster was again name dropped as one of the Pantheon gods last season. So trying to see how it ties in. But I have to say, I'm thoroughly enjoying, I'm as I said, almost two seasons through, I'm thoroughly enjoying the pure camp of the Sarah Jane Adventures. Like, there is in one of the first arcs of the first season, it's called Eye of the Gorgon, and we just have people going around chanting, "Save the Gorgon, serve the Gorgon, serve the Gorgon." And Sarah Jane gets a sonic lipstick. So
yes, she does.
Do Doctor
The Sarah stuff. Jane Adventures was great. It was really under, I don't know the numbers, but I get the impression it was underwatched. But it was a great branch out to, like, olive branch to kids to get them, indoctrinate them into Doctor Who.
Yeah. Yeah, the main characters are teenagers. Yeah. So, yeah, the main characters are teenagers, so it's not as kiddie as I feared going in. But it's quite silly. But yeah, the Trickster comes up in the first two seasons, especially in Whatever Happened to Sarah Jane, which is episodes 7 and 8 of season one. And then part two is The Temptation of Sarah Jane, which is season two, episodes 9 and 10. And first of all, I have to say, it looks like a mirror draw from the Wheel of Time TV show. Looks just like that, except fewer teeth. And it feeds on the timelines. Removing timelines and saying chaos is good. So this is reminding me of that Turn Left episode a bit. And it blurs the line between what is a trick of memory and what's an alternate reality. So something just, yeah, messing with the reality of the timelines, but not having a new, not fully multiverse, but just kind of changing things on the spot.
So more our perception of time?
Yeah, I mean, not perception of time because it, like, changes. I mean, I suppose it is, but at the one point, they pull the people he pulls from the timeline. He's like, everybody forget this character, Sarah Jane, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so Sarah Jane gets pulled to this limbo, which looks like the white void, which is, or the land of fiction, which is why I was asking you, John, about some was it Second Doctor shenanigans
the land of fiction there. Was kind of wild. That has Jamie in it, and the Doctor and the Jamie, one of the first queer couples on TV. I will die on that hill. That was the Doctor's first love interest.
We can hope one day they maybe confirm it.
But yeah, I gotta go back and watch those because I'm curious if there's any tie into that. But yeah, so basically the Trickster uses timey-wimey-ness to take over Earth and mine it for minerals to fuel his space conquest. And just the fact that it was name dropped, I feel like we might get this coming back. So I'll keep watching and report back. Just another couple fun things. There's a computer who's actually a living crystal called a Xylock, which are intelligent crystals trapped in the Earth and who influence things around them through technology. And in classic Who, season 6, there was something called the Crotons. You watch that one so far? There was intelligent crystals who learn through mimicry.
No, I have no memory of this place.
Okay, no, it's fine. Oh. But this mimicry thing is reminding me again of what is this entity that was in the well, that was in Listen. Midnight.
Yeah.
Just want to point out that the companion in Sarah Jane's last name is Chandra. So Rani Chandra and her father and her parents. This could just be, it's just a common last name, but I would not hate if they made Belinda related to her.
Well, what's interesting is that we also have a character called the Rani as well.
Right. Exactly
the same way.
She's not the Rani, though.
That would she's be not some interweaving incredibleness. Yeah, that would take some processing.
People want it so badly. Mm-hmm. And then there's a debate over whether they even have the rights to the Rani because, like, a lot of the original villains belonged to the writers because that's how it worked more than, like, the Daleks. Doctor Who still has to license them.
Yeah, it's Terrence Dix, isn't it? They are his baby, quite literally.
The BBC has to pay him every time they use the Daleks.
It's incredible. It's worth it.
His estate, I guess.
Yeah. The Rani is probably the biggest character that hasn't returned that people are still calling out for. Every single conspiracy theory starts with the Rani.
Mm-hmm. Right. So a lot of people are wondering if Mrs. Flood is the Rani.
It doesn't work for me. Like, there's not enough in it.
No. The Rani is a third Time Lord, for anyone who doesn't know. So we have the Doctor, we have the Master, and we have the Rani.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was tying back into the Pantheon and Sarah Jane Smith, there's a Day of the Clown, which is one of the first serials in season two. And I get very Toy Maker vibes from that. So again, like menacingly playful, but Pied Piper. So this is canonically the Pied Piper of this universe who dresses up as a clown and does this whole array of accents, including dressing up just like Neil Patrick Harris's version in the 60th anniversary special and doing a German accent.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I would be amazed if there's this much tying back to Sarah Jane. Like, why? what would be RTD's mission here in getting people to watch the Sarah Jane Adventures?
I mean, I think it's just tying it all together because we're even getting references to things that people thought were made non-canon. Like, what's the alternative Eighth Doctor? The Kokook? What's is it? Kokook?
It's Richard E. Grant and the name of that cartoon adventure was...
Starts with the K, right? Yes.
Oh, it's escaped me. That's the worst. Hang on.
We'll figure it out.
But it is interesting that this Day of the Clown entity, this toy maker like entity, comes from a dark nebula where entities are created from human emotion and must feed on human emotion to survive. I mean, could that just be the Pantheon? Since he's already tied in
Sarah Jane Smith. I think it makes sense.
It's the scream of the Shulka.
There we go. Sorry. Oh, I knew there was a K in there somewhere.
There was a K in there. And you know, if you rearrange the letters there, it says, I am the master, Mrs. Flood. Mm. No, I'm just joking around.
It actually spells Bad Wolf.
Anyway, that's Ben. It's all connected.
I love it. Love that. I love it. Love every week you got me going with all these theories and, I feel like one day we're going to have RTD in here on the show. Maybe. And
he's going to be like, Alicia, you saw it. You saw it so far in advance. You read my mind.
I was thinking it was going to be like when we had David Goyer on the show and he goes, David, you got to stop asking about Markley and Foundation. It's just a side character, David. Dean, I don't know if you've heard that one, but he's like, what's that character you're all obsessed with?
That's amazing. Just stop it.
The showrunner came onto our podcast to tell us that our theory was stupid.
That's amazing. That's so great. Oh, I love that.
No, they love hearing us.
I mean, statistically, if you make enough predictions, one of them will be right.
Right. I mean, I think they love that, you know, their shows are inspiring people to be like, ooh, but what if?
Well, that's what you want. That's the dream. Mm-hmm. Like, you want people talking about it. You want people speculating, and the more wild the theory the better. My more grounded theory about how this is going to end is I feel like it's the Doctor or a version of the Doctor or a version of reality where the Doctor presses this button to destroy Earth because somebody on Earth has threatened Susan. And Susan's life is in danger, and that is the final straw. Like, that's the... If there's anything that's going to turn the Doctor against Earth, it would be somebody threatening his grandchild. So I feel like that Susan is calling out for help, and that turns the Doctor against Earth. But maybe it's all manipulation from Mrs. Flood.
But why that date, because Susan was centuries in the future of that date, right? That's where she got left, was a future Earth.
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
So why May the 24th, 2025?
Because at some future adventure, the Doctor brings her back to May 24th.
Because that is when the penultimate episode airs.
Exactly. Wouldn't it be nice, though, if, you know, Carol Ann Ford is getting up there in years, if they're going to bring Susan back, have her regenerate and, like, have a new Susan be a companion of the Doctor again and rehabilitate the character a little bit, because we don't need whiny Susan being...
That would be great. Yeah,
yeah, sure. The only Susan, I'm there.
Right? Yep.
Love it. I'm absolutely here for it. It would be great.
Yeah.
What if Belinda is the
regenerated new
Susan already?
And she modeled herself off of Mundy Flim.
Yes. I mean, there's precedent for that as well. Romana, who is another Time Lord, a companion of the Doctor, literally they meet somebody on an adventure and changes her face. And the Doctor's like, you can't steal a face. And she's like, of course I can. I'm a Time Lord.
Yeah. And then Peter Capaldi does too, right? Like, that's exactly. The whole thing.
So yeah, there are certain Time Lords that can absolutely influence what they look like.
Did you watch there was a remaster, I think it was, or a reissue of the second War Doctor's War Games. Did you see what they did with the new Doctors?
It was incredible. Alicia,
do you know about this?
No.
It was so clever.
So Ian, do you want to describe what they did?
Well, the end of the episode, the Doctor has been very naughty and meddly, and the Time Lords, instead of throwing him in jail, banish him to Earth and force him to regenerate. And the Doctor's like, you can't force me to regenerate. And they're like, it's okay, we'll let you choose what you're going to look like. And he's like, well, okay, fine, I'll choose. And what they did was beautiful. They have the dialogue from the original episode. And you have Patrick Troughton saying, no, he's too skinny, he's too young, he's too old. And they throw up a picture of Matt Smith when he says he's too skinny, a picture of Peter Capaldi when he says he's too old. And every insult that he has about the picture throws up a Doctor that we see in the future. So it's if you're going to remaster something, it's such a great way to do it. And eventually he can't pick and they force him. We're just going to pick a face for you.
And I'm more okay with this than I am them putting Hayden Christensen in Return of the Jedi, because there was an actual actor who was supposed to be the character in Return of the Jedi, whereas here, this is just like random faces he could choose from. And it's more meaningful if it's like, oh, those are actually going to be his future faces anyway.
But it's so great. It's such a great opportunity to stick that in when you didn't even have to force any audio in. His audio is right there. Just pick one of the 14 Doctors to slip in. It's great.
Oh boy.
Well, let's see what happens in. So we only know the titles of the last two. So probably people listening, we'll be watching live with everybody else to see what we missed at the end. But we know that the last two are Wish World and The Reality War. So, both written by RTD.
All right. Better do right, RTD. I mean, it's all on you now.
Something interesting, as I wish I need to remember the name of this book the next time we come on the show, because it's a book I mentioned a couple of episodes ago. And it's when he was writing season three and he has this correspondence with a journalist, and they basically turn those correspondence into a book. And he's talking about how he's quite candid, and he says, yes, every episode has a written by credit. However, every episode is written by me. So he touches everything. So just when it says written by Russell TD, that means it was only written by him. Every other episode has still had him rewriting it. He just doesn't put his name on everything. I think he's one of those that is very controlling about where his narrative is going. So,
yeah.
Because
everything is deliberate.
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
He did an interview recently, a really pretty lengthy interview with David Tennant on his podcast. And I thought it was really fascinating to get it. There was no like bombshell Doctor Who reveal or anything like that. So don't go in expecting that. But it was nice to hear RTD's process a little bit.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, we did it, everybody.
Yeah, we did.
Do we have any Whovian emails? I didn't check.
No, we didn't this week, but do send them in next week for TARDIS@thelorehounds.com. Yeah, I want to hear everybody's thoughts about this. Is a big episode.
I know. This was by far the longest podcast we've done on the season, and I think for good reason. Not just the classic Doctor Who spit, tangents, but also because there was a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So many time streams.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wibbly wobbly. Yeah, we'll see the Discord. I'm sure there'll be much discussion there after this one.
Yeah. For sure. Well, you can join us on our Discord. It's in the link tree in the show notes. You can check out our other podcasts. We have Andor, The Last of Us, and Murderbot. We're just starting Murderbot. That's a lot of fun. If you want more like fun sci-fi, I think Murderbot's going to be right up your alley. Mm-hmm. And Ian, can you talk a little bit about Captain's Pod?
Yeah. So I have a Star Trek podcast with my lovely co-host, Danae. We're currently on a hiatus until Strange New Worlds returns, which was just announced for July 17th.
What season is that up to now?
Season 3, finally. It's been kind of an 18-month wait for this third season.
So could I start Strange New World season 1 and enjoy it without any Star Trek?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
All
right. In fact, it's my new entry point for people getting into Star Trek currently. Strange New Worlds is, it's a great entry point. It's very kind to the new viewer while not alienating fans, fans of like that level of the lore as we are.
Okay.
So we're currently on a bit of a break, but there are still 200 episodes that you can catch up with until we return in July take each episode of Strange New Worlds as it comes out.
Very cool. All right. I got to check this. Maybe I'm going to try to catch up now that we have Andor done. I think I can catch. I think I can do this. I think I can join you on this journey.
Well, I have a lovely companion show to recommend, which is Captain's Pod, and we've covered Strange New Worlds season 1 and 2. Great place to start.
Very nice, very nice. I'll cue it up. I'll get my watching done. I'll get my listening in, and we'll be all set.
Nice,
Alicia. Can you tell us what else is happening on the Lorehounds and beyond?
So on the main feed, in addition to our weekly stuff, check out that episode of Sinners that came out recently. And the next one coming up that Jean and I are recording later today, is the plan, is Thunderbolts. Finally, we're talking about that. Those were my two favorite films of the year, 2025 so far. So, very happy Sinners to talk about
incredible.
Them both.
Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Movie. Absolutely. And Thunderbolts also is surprisingly... has a lot of emotional depth. It's a really great character piece with a lot of fun and just put together really well, well-paced, I think. Well-constructed. And Supercast and Patreon, you get all of this stuff ad-free, of course, plus the bonus content for Andor and all the other season pass content stuff and the extra second breakfast and 11Zs. I promise we're doing a real pain. plus something else for May. And you'll find in the link tree in the show notes links to all the affiliates. Never mind the music where psychology meets music, Radioactive Ramblings, doing Fallout lore at the moment. Rings and Rituals, Properly Howard, Wool Shift Dust, and the Star Wars Canon Timeline Podcast. Do you want to shout out some thank yous, Jim?
I would love to. We'd like to thank people here, people who make our podcasting experience better and able to justify to our partners when we spend an hour and a half talking about Doctor Who. So, our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doof71, Athena A., Tina Listu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard, thank you for making sure that we can have a custom Discord link so we don't look like noobs. And our lore masters, who are our top-tier Patreon Supercast subscribers and keep the gears turning here at Lorehound Central, they are Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., Brian P., SC, Peter OH, Adam S., Nancy M., Doof71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Matthew M., Sarah M., Andra B., Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Listu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, /him, and Adrian. Thank you, everyone. May the TARDIS be with you. I don't know. I've been watching too much Star Wars lately. And we'll see you next week.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at
thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.